This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 132.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello, and welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one amazing hand gesturing minute at a time. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And joining us as a guest this week is Matt Gourley of We Did Super Ego Yesterday. What podcast should we mention today?
Let's do I Was There Too.
I Was There Too.
With a relevant episode. Yeah, the relevant episode that one day we woke up and it was like a tidal wave of people telling us, have you listened to this? Your interview with Johnny Roast Beef, right?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, excellent. All right, cool.
Well, thanks for joining us. And this minute starts with Jimmy giving directions, giving wonderful, wonderful directions that have pretty much influenced every direction I've ever given from this point on.
Like you're tucking in a sheet on a wall.
Oh, man. And it ends with Karen leaving. She's leaving.
So it's important to note that the hand gesture that we were referring to, this is a big moment because this, and I didn't confirm this by watching the rest of the movie, but I'm pretty sure that this is the last quirky Robert De Niro hand gesture of the movie.
Hmm.
This is on the same level as Drinks Are on the House, you know, in the bat scene. Like the telling her to go into the storefront, the go in motion is just classic De Niro.
I feel like that this plays some sort of part in the early origins of us doing this show. If there were to be certain themes about this movie that have been discussed between us as friends for a very long time, I feel like this was a very early one.
Yeah.
Where somebody had made that motion or gestured or something like that. And it was when we did not know each other as well as we do now, which is amazing, that somebody made that and it was like, oh, you like that film too.
Yep. Could be.
That's funny you should mention that because my buddy Jeff and I watched this movie so much that we would do those type of specific gestures so like energetically and just full of, I don't know, like it had all that kind of like pent up energy that they have. And then you would do it over and over to the point where it evolved in this joke where you would do it and the other person would go, are you stuck? And then you had to unstuck them by touching them. And this is not... like, I'm not proud of these things. But then sometimes you'd be sitting there in a room with them, even if it was in school, and turn around and they had been stuck for 30 minutes sitting there doing the thing and you never saw them and they can't move until you unstick them. And it was just absolutely ridiculous. But the commitment level was high.
Let me ask all of you and everyone listening as well. Try to make that hand gesture without moving your face.
You can't not do it without a De Niro face.
You can't do it. Those lips go, the upper lip gets like stretched.
Whatever position your arm is in with your hand affects the tendons in your cheeks and sides of your face.
It's impossible not to do it. I'm trying right now. It's walking and chewing gum territory.
Oh, God. It's the last I mean, like, you got him telling her to keep walking down the street, right? You got that motion and him pointing. It's right there. And then it's the last go right in moment that it's a suite of hand gestures that is just amazing.
It does culminate.
Yes.
Like, it builds. The best one is last.
Yes,
it builds. The tucking in the sheet on the wall, which is bravo, by the way. I mean, you could walk away now. It would have been perfect.
So now let's have the great debate now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Setting her up to be murdered here?
Well, so Karen's walking down the street. She's trying to get to the storefront where the dresses are in, and she, Jimmy is telling her, keep going, and she gets to a storefront that I'm not sure, it might be the sketchiest storefront ever.
It certainly is.
Because, like, what it is that, like, there's no lights are on. It's got the metal grate that's, like, half open. It's lit, again, similar to that other shot that we talked about yesterday. It's lit very well, and that, like, there's a light source coming in the back of the store. There's a man lifting boxes. There's a large fat man, I think, in an A-shirt in the back as well. There's pallets. And then they stop and look at Karen, and you just see their silhouettes. And it's like a horror movie.
Every time there's something in evidence that he's going to kill her, I find something that just kind of, I go, oh, that's no big deal. Because even when she approaches and the guys go, shh, and that could just be because they're fencing illegal goods. But then I thought, would he kill Karen before Henry?
I was actually talking to somebody earlier today because they were like, oh, what episode are you recording? I'm like, oh, it's the, is Jimmy trying to kill Karen? And I have gone back and forth on this topic for years, literally years I've thought about this. And I'm at the point now where I do not believe that Jimmy was going to have Karen killed, that this is Karen's paranoia, that in fact there are dresses just past the sketchy palettes. But the thing is, it's super sketch and it's super weird.
He's also very insistent she goes to get them.
Yeah, true. I've tried to leave my parents' house without a plate of lasagna, but my mother's very insistent. You know, like, he wanted her to take the dresses.
Your mother's like Jimmy Conway?
Yeah, sure. I don't think that Jimmy has anything to gain by whacking Karen at this point.
I agree.
So I thought that too. And then he gains her trust. He looks her in the eyes, says, don't worry, gives her a little kiss, and there's sincerity on his face. She walks away, and then the camera whip pans back to him, and he's got this look like, she better fucking go there, you know?
Yeah,
and
true.
It's not about dresses. But then again, I get swung back. I think you should have your listeners do a hashtag thing on Twitter where it's Karen lives or Karen dies, and vote and see what people get to.
I like it. If you're listening to the show, go on Twitter and post that Goodfellas Men on Twitter and say hashtag Karen lives or hashtag Karen dies and vote. Be heard. Actually, we should post a Twitter poll.
We'll do both.
Yeah, because God forbid there's another hashtag that's Karen dies and you find out you're in some kind of creepy,
horrible. The family's all upset.
Oh, man.
I don't think that he's innocent entirely. I think that he's definitely thinking that he probably will have to kill her. I don't think that he was going to do it at this point. Those creepy guys in silhouette, they don't seem like they're ready to spring and a murder.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, they're lifting boxes and they look surprised. Now, the only thing that makes me doubt that is the last seconds of this minute, they cut back to Jimmy and he is so pissed.
Yeah.
And he's doing that like walk in a half circle thing. He's so mad.
Because he knows he's lost her trust.
Yeah.
Not because it didn't go through, but because I think this is about Karen realizing what the situation is that she's in for the first time.
Yeah.
Like when she's walking down that street, she knows that, oh, Henry was right. This is bad. And that she gets scared just in general. So she wants to leave. But I don't think she's going to get killed there at that time.
I wonder, too, if we're dealing with different perspectives too. So did De Niro and Scorsese have a conversation about this, or is De Niro making his own choice and in the editing is Scorsese making his own choice? I would love to know, be able to ask them if they're on the same page.
Like when they're shooting, what's the motivation? Like does Marty pull De Niro aside and say, you're going to whack her? Yeah. Or not. Or is De Niro adding the angry pacing at the end himself? Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah.
But I believe, and I only half believe this, I'm only half joking, but the answer is there at the end of this minute when the crane shot pans up and it says, don't walk, implying run.
Interesting.
I know that's too, like, that, room 237, but
that crane shot is completely out of place. Like, have
yeah,
we
it, have we gone
above
like a,
eye level
yes.
in this well, movie yeah. at all?
Yes, we have.
No, I don't know.
Yes, we have. When we craned into the truck where Carbone was hanging.
Yep. Yeah.
But that is coming down to eye level.
Not
like almost everything in this movie is there. This is
we started above it though, so we've been above eye level. Not very often.
I tell you something. That above shot would indicate that we're seeing a full view of everything, and that she's right. I think
that's the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing about that shot is that it shows that they're at the corner of West 9th and Smith Street. And this is one of the rare instances of this movie where a shot on location and it's the same location in the movie as in real life, that they actually did film it at Smith Street and 9th Street along the Gowanus Canal under the F line in Brooklyn in Red Hook. So
hold on. That's not Red Hook. That's
not yes, Red, it is.
No, it's not. That's my subway line. It's Gowanus. Not Red Hook. It's Gowanus. Red Hook has no subways going into it.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Yep. Okay. I'll allow it.
That's exactly where his place is, because I looked it up too, because it's such a indicator of where they are. I mean, he basically puts the camera on the street sign.
Yeah.
Was it a big deal? Why is such emphasis on the signs?
I have no idea why that emphasis there, as nothing in my research was I able to find where Jimmy's swag jukebox warehouse was. Other than the jukebox district in Brooklyn, there's honestly this shot, similar to the angle of it, the focusing on the street signs, I don't understand the significance of it.
I think that they found a location that worked visually and sort of the way it's spaced out, and it was all perfect and laid out there. And so why not go up and show that sign because they're there?
Wait, I thought you said, Ron, this was where it took place in real life.
No. I don't know where it took place in real life. Like,
they did dress the location to be a different place than it was.
No, I get that. When you first mentioned the street signs, I thought you said this was a rare instance of them shooting in the location where it actually happened.
No. I'm sorry. I misspoke. I meant it's a rare instance of them shooting in a location and leaving the location where they actually are.
Yeah. That's what's weird about it, is because it's such a prominent image in the shot, and it's not, you know, I looked it up. I couldn't find any significance to this in terms of the story. It's bizarre.
It's a sketchy part of Gowanus. I mean, like, that's all it is.
More sketchy then.
Yeah, then. Now there's a Home Depot. So the fun fact for this is that, as I mentioned, that's the IND Culver line, which is the F and G line right above them, which is the subway I used to take to and from Manhattan, my house, when I lived in Brooklyn. What's interesting about this particular stop, which is the Smith and 9th Street stop on the F and G line, is that at 87.5 feet, it is the highest train station above ground in the whole world.
Wow.
Huh.
It is the highest train stop in the whole world, yes.
Wow.
Who knew?
Yep.
That really was a fun fact.
Yeah. I have gotten off at that stop once, and I don't remember why. And even, I don't know, that would have been 10, 12 years ago.
Oh, I know why. You were pricing out jukeboxes. You went to the jukebox district.
Yeah, well, obviously. I thought that was just west of Koreatown. Yeah, no, it was still kind of creepy. But like, I feel like as you rode past that, you could see that spot, couldn't you, on the train?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
That's great. If I had to do that every day like you did, Connor, I mean, that gesture, it would be an unstoppable tick.
You live two blocks from the cab stand.
I know, and I visited it often.
So after the shot of the street signs, we see, you know, Jimmy annoyed and walking in a semicircle, and you get a very clear shot of the second pinball machine to be featured in this scene, and it is Nitro Ground Shaker, which was manufactured by Bally Manufacturing, and it came out in January 1980, and it is known for being one of the first car racing themed pinball machines. There you go, Nitro Ground Shaker. Yes.
Have you played that one?
I have not played Nitro Ground Shaker.
Is that the same Bally that does the gyms?
No.
Okay. These are just amateur pinball questions.
I believe the gym is Bally's.
Yes.
And the pinball is Bally.
One of them's still in business.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Bally is gone. Bally's all sad. Yeah. The pinball's gone.
Sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to have a moment.
I have a question. When those guys are in the store and they say shh, and then something about put the crate up against the window. There's other things they're saying that I couldn't make out. Did you guys figure that out at all?
I did not. Normally Connor figures that stuff out.
Whoa, what do you mean?
Well, you do the fox.
You're looking for fox.
I'm looking for fox, yeah, but I couldn't. I mean,
there could be a hidden fuck in there.
The ambiguity of it is great. The whole scene is ambiguous. We've been arguing about it earlier. And whether or not he means to kill her, I think what's great about this particular minute is that there's so much dread in it.
Yeah.
And it's not so uncomfortable.
there's so much dread despite the fact that the first guy in the storefront is wearing white pants. Which you wouldn't, I wouldn't have expected, but he's wearing white pants. So there
Angel
you go.
Of the death. Massive, oversized leather shoulder pads give to any of that dread at all?
Possibly.
Do you think those are some sort of signifier?
A lot of squeaking going on as she walks on the street.
Did we not have the open question when Henry got bailed out of jail and they were in the Volvo, whether that was their car or Karen's mother's car?
Right.
Or did I make that up?
I think it's her car. But yeah, it's her car. She drives it in this.
Well, and I wanted to go back because in the book Wise Guy, Henry talks about how the police they confiscated his Volvo. Henry did, in fact, own a Volvo.
He had a Volvo.
Yeah.
I own a Volvo.
Right, but that makes more sense than Henry owning a Volvo.
No, but here's the thing you got to understand about Henry is that he's a middle-level guy living on Long Island. Of course he drives a Volvo. He's not going to drive a Cadillac. He's
that
not
seems
Paulie.
Pretty waspy.
No, I don't know if it's waspy. It's just it was the time. It was 1980. It was safe.
Again, you're just saying nothing to convince me. I feel like he's still going to have like a Mercury or something.
It does feel kind of waspy because I grew up in the most waspy family possible, and we had an old Volvo like that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in a pretty waspy area, and there were Volvos everywhere. Nobody looked like Henry.
I don't know. Volvos were like you threw a rock on Long Island in the 80s and you hit a Volvo.
Really?
Actually, that seems unusual to me, too, because I think you'd throw a rock in the 80s and you'd hit an IROC Z.
Because that's the cliche.
Yeah, I know. There's a reason for it.
Yeah, but the reality is that, you know, legions of suburban mothers are driving their kids to soccer practice in Volvos.
But Henry's not one of those people is my point.
No, but they've got kids.
He wasn't a normal 9-to-5 guy.
I know. He's just cutting corners.
But is that her car? That's her car, right?
Yeah. That's her car.
Yeah. That makes a little more sense. Like maybe
they had matching Volvos, though.
It's like a mom car, right? Yeah. That makes sense.
This is still pre-minivan, so.
Right. And good job on Karen on peeling out.
Yeah. In that car? Sure.
In a Volvo, yeah.
In a front-wheel drive car that's underpowered?
I know. Those things are probably manual, too. And to reverse, you got to pull up these, like, you use your two first fingers and pull up this thing. Do you guys remember that? Did you ever have one?
No,
I never had that.
It's true. To reverse on a stick shift Volvo of that era, it has this little ring around the gear shift thing, and you reach down below it and lift it up. And then
I know.
Because the Volkswagen had the same thing, but you had to push down instead.
That's right.
It was instead of being down and to the right, it was up and to the left.
Yes. I learned to drive on a 1970 Volkswagen bus, and I feel like I could drive anything since then.
That's an odd choice. It was the same size as a Beetle, so same footprint. So obviously, I want to go ahead and just point out that while we have said that this is around the end of Jimmy's best gesturing, we're going to see him age rapidly in the coming weeks, which I'm pretty excited about. Because here you can see his clothes look a little more old manish. His glasses are pretty old manish, which we'd mentioned. But he's starting to get a little stoop going on there. Yeah. But when they show the close up on his face, like he still kind of looks young.
I feel like the stoop is pronounced with the glasses on the bridge of the nose. Like the need to wear those glasses are increasing the stoop, increasing the aging kind of factor. And
And the need to do that gesture of the sheet tuck pulls his whole body forward at the top, which hunches him a little. It all contributes. Aging and bad posture is it the use of that gesture or vice versa? It's like a chicken or the egg. So
I do my lip, but I also duck my head a little. I hunch. Yeah.
Many years ago when we were doing our other podcast, iFanboy, we had to go rent some equipment. We had to go rent a mixer because we were having more guests on the show. And we went to a place in the west side of Manhattan. There's a whole part of town and in Hell's Kitchen, actually, where Jimmy would have run things, where you can rent TV and film equipment. And we rented a mixer. It was a giant mixer that you and I had to carry together because it was so big.
I remember that.
And the guy at the place was directing us to the elevator, and he used almost the exact same gesture, and we almost dropped the mixer laughing.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Professionalism.
It was very.
No, we didn't drop it.
Yeah, there you go.
Because we were in front.
It was very similar.
We definitely had to pay for it.
Yeah. Just run.
It was a sketchy, like warehousey kind of place too. So it definitely had that vibe of if I go into the wrong room, I would be stabbed.
Right. Okay, it wasn't mixer, it was cocaine.
Well, sure, but you didn't have to tell them.
Sorry.
Does anybody have anything else? Like, there are no fucks, I assume.
Yeah, fuck was zero.
All right, sorry.
I'm just worried I'm not going to get a fuck my whole week here.
You'll get You'll get one.
Connor, don't give it away.
I'll throw you one.
Okay, sorry. Oh,
the anticipation is going to make it all better.
Leave the suspense. Leave the suspense.
Okay.
Oh. Okay, so that's going to do... You all right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to do it for minute 132. You can come back tomorrow for minute 133. Until then, you can check us out on Twitter at GoodfellasMin, on Instagram and Facebook at GoodfellasMin, and you can find all of our episodes over at GoodfellasMinute.com. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon.com/GFM or GoodfellasMinute.com, where you can find the link to shop via Amazon. And if you want to email us, that is contact@GoodfellasMinute.com. But again, you have to weigh in on the social media and somehow about whether she's going to get whacked or not. We have to know. We have to know what you think, because we can't. Are we doing the hashtag? Or are we worried there's some sort of...
No, we're going to do them.
Yeah, we'll do the hashtag. We'll deal with it. If there's a poor woman named Karen who died at some point, we're stealing their hashtag. We're sorry.
It's #KarenLives, #KarenDies.
Yep. Yeah. Let your voice be heard.
Then we will be back tomorrow, 133.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up to...
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened, because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.